I'm here in Enniskillen and I'm talking to Jenny Ferguson. Jenny, where were you? Where's home?
Now, where's yes. home? I live 10 miles west of Enniskillen, 1 mile south of a little village called Derrigonley. That's where I live now. I live in Derrigonley. It's just a mile outside the village.
And where did you grow up then?
I grew up between, really, I guess, the parish of Adramsea is where I grew up, which was about 6 miles from Rosslea and about, I suppose the same, to Newton Butler, about 6-8 miles from Newton Butler, probably about 3 miles from the border as the crow flies.
Okay, and what was your father doing for a living?
My father died when I was 4. So my mum reared us. There was 4 of us. And she farmed. And we helped her farm. So I lived up.
Oh, so it was a farming and your mother brought you up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what was childhood like in the 60s and 70s?
Childhood was quite innocent. We were reared in a Church of Ireland family and we would have went to church every Sunday, probably went to Sunday school twice on a Sunday. We would have went to the Methodist in the afternoon to make sure we were properly sorted. And we would have been sent to all the different, if it was missionaries in the area, you were sent to them as well. So we were well sorted with religion, I think. Quite naive, as I said, my mum reared us. I was the youngest of 4. So it was a pretty innocent childhood. Just going to school, coming home from school, whatever it was.
And so when the troubles started, were you were still a young girl going to school. But what was your first experience that, you know,
of the troubles?
Of the troubles and something happening?
Yeah. I would have probably been about 6 or 7. I was born in 64, so I probably was probably about 8 or 9. And I remember the first thing I remember about the Troubles was Harry Creighton lived in the village of Markervilly, which was about 2 or 3 miles from our house, and he was shot coming home off duty. And it was a terrible thing. It was, oh my goodness, the shock. And he was buried in our church. He was a member of our church, so he's buried there. And I think it was a military funeral, and that was a big thing because we'd never heard tell of that. And suddenly, I think around that time then, it seemed to increase the patrols on the roads, meeting the army. When you'd be walking home from school, you would nearly always meet an army patrol walking along because we were quite close to the border. And it seemed to step up a level. There was all the stops on the roads. Then the elections would come and the buses, there used to be rows in the buses because even though our education was segregated, I went to a Protestant school, we would have got the buses that would have lifted the Catholics as well as ourselves. So the rows would be on the buses. And
Between the kids?
Between the kids.
Yourselves,
especially
yeah.
about the elections. Because at that point it was Harry West, was MP. And we would be singing Harry West is the best. It was mad, like it was crazy, but that's the way it was. And as I went to school, my next really big thing was Harriet Winston Hall was blew up. Him and Joe Rose, there were 2 policemen, and Winston Ho was from beside me, and that was shocking. And I remember the bus couldn't get out up our road with me to get me home because the funeral was going on in the church, and I could hear them singing in the church and me walking along the road and meeting an army patrol. How weird was that?
Yeah.
Weird. And thinking, you know, looking up and could hear them singing. And me meeting an army patrol and having to walk home. And me being cross because the bus couldn't get me in.
My goodness.
Yeah. It was weird. Then, really, then, it was... troubles were going on and there was a lot. There was, you know, not every night, but maybe once a month, the flares would go up from somebody's house because they were being attacked or thought they were being attacked. People were very nervous, you know. Everybody was nervous because they just did not know what was going to be next, you know.
But your childhood, again, your schooling days in school, do you think that, looking back, that you were kind of led to believe that, look, here we have Catholics, Protestants, and you're on the Protestant side and there's the Catholic side, and there was them against us. Mm-hmm. Was that part of school?
We were scared. We were scared because there were so many people. You were scared at night. You weren't out at night, but you were scared. You were scared because you had this, because it was so, especially in our area, it was all one-sided. It wasn't as if Protestants was going out killing Catholics. That wasn't happening. It was all, I guess, diarrhea, killing all these people around us. Like, we had neighbours. It was a weird, I don't know how, we just didn't go out at night. We didn't. We stayed in. It wasn't a good time. It wasn't a nice time.
Because you say that the IRA were killing Protestants.
Mm-hmm.
But were the Protestants killing IRA people? Or sorry, were Protestants killing nationalists living in the area?
No. There was no retaliation at all till it was really bad in the 70s. And then it suddenly stopped because there was two guys killed at Newton Butler. They were killed, Harry Creighton. Harry Creighton was murdered. That was the first thing I remember. And then there was like a retaliation at some point. There was these two guys killed, Murray and Nan. And then the whole thing sort of stopped for a while, because I don't think either side knew who had killed who at this point. And it turned out then that it was rogue soldiers that killed Murray and Nan. And as soon as that was found out, the thing started again. And it was nearly worse then. That was, I suppose, 1980 then. And it got increasingly worse. And many was killed in 1 year. But it was, you know, maybe somebody going to his work in the factory. There was a guy killed on Newton Butler Road and he was carrying his lunchbox. And he was killed, and Richie Latimer. Like, I remember I was working part time because I must have been about 15, 16 then. And I remember coming through Newton Butler, and the police were dragging this guy up the street. I don't know to this day who he was, but I got a lift home with our Catholic neighbours from work, and they were saying, you know, don't say anything. And they were wary of me in the back because I was Protestant, and yet they were dragging this boy up the street, and Richie had been killed in a shop down the street. And it was, you know, when I think back on it, it was mighty stuff, wasn't it? Really was.
Well, did it ever come to your door?
No.
At home?
No, because there was
in
nobody.
The farm.
There was nobody in my family on the security forces. So it didn't come to my door because we were just farmers.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was never any
threats?
No. Never any threats. We were never threatened, really. I know in my brother's house, they wrote things on my brother's house, but that was later on. I think that was in the 80s that they wrote things because he was in the Orange Lodge and they wrote something on his walls, but that was about it. There was never any real threats towards us. Like, I babysat for our neighbours who were Catholics, and they had five kids and I babysat them all, you know.
Yes.
But there was always this underlying current where those things weren't spoke about. And you just didn't talk about it, you know.
Yeah.
And my mother now and again would have a row with the neighbour, you know. They would have a spat of words about what was going on. You know, she would be sort of defending what they had to do in her own way. You know, nearly defending that more. And then my mum would just say, no, that's enough of that. You know, these is innocent people. And I think what hit home most in my family was Arlene Foster's father and my mother are first cousins. And my mother and Arlene's father were like brother and sister because Johnny was an only child. And my granny lived with us, who would have been Arlene's great aunt. So Arlene's granny would come to our house to see my granny. So we were all as great friends, and my mother and Johnny were great friends. They were like brother and sister. They would have got on very, very well together. And my mum had problems with my brothers. She would talk to Johnny, because Johnny was old police. Oh, not the young boys, but Johnny would advise and say, because I had a brother who was quite disruptive.
Yeah.
And if mum was having real issues with him, she'd talk to Johnny. So when Johnny was shot at Rosslea and they had to move, it annoyed my mother terribly. Because she...
So tell me the circumstances behind that shooting.
Arlene's father.
Yes. Was he shot and killed?
No, he was shot and injured. He went out... Yeah. Arlene's family weren't poor, but were just normal people. So they wouldn't have had a lot, and they only had very small land, acreage of land. So Johnny was in, I don't know what they called them, weren't B specials. He was an AS or something. He was some substantial constable or something. And he was in Rosslea. So they came one night, he went out to close the cows up, I think, or close the gate, or close something. But anyway, they opened fire. And his mother was living at the time, and she would have been in early 90s, late 80s, 90s. And he crawled into the house on his hands and knees and got up the stairs and put up flares. So they run then, you know, they didn't stay hang about. So then they moved. Immediately after that, they were moved out of the area. So mum missed him a lot.
I see. And that was the signal to alert the UDR forces to come to the house.
Yes, yeah.
That something was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. what was...
We could see the flares from our house.
Could you?
Yeah. So that was a bit scary. You know, you would see flares going up.
And what was his first name again?
Johnny. Yeah. Yeah, but he lived to fight another day. Like, he went and lived in Lisniski, lived in the town, something that he would have never done because he was a farmer. But he went and he lived in Lisniski till he died.
Yeah, but there were so many things to do with schools. I mean, the bus that was carrying Eileen Foster.
Yeah, And she went and lived in Lisniski. She did her 11 plus. Went to the collegiate in Enniskillen. And I think she was about a third year when the bus was blew up that she was on.
Yeah.
So...
And so why blow up a bus full of children, you know?
They were targeting the guy that was driving the bus because he was a part-time UDR man.
Ernie Wilson.
Yeah.
And so what happened then with Master Sanders? He was killed in...
Master Sanderson was killed in Timor. He was a major in the UDR, or a captain. He would have been ex-army and then came back and settled there. And then, of course, when the UDR was formed, they picked up on any officers or any soldiers that had regular service.
Yes.
And that's why he became then an officer in the UDR, because he would have had rank.
But apart from, when you heard those stories, then you were thinking, as you know, going to school, would my schoolmaster be shot? Will our bus be blown up?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you were young. You didn't think about it like that. You would now. I'm terrified of starting up again because I'm older now and I know what it does to people.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a good time.
Your mother was living on her own in the farm. I mean, how... She must have been a tough lady to put up with all of that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she was. She was tough as old boots. Like, Johnny Kelly was tough as old boots because, like, Arlene's tough.
Yeah,
you know, it's bred in us. My grandfather was a unionist councillor. My other grand on the other side was a unionist councillor. When I looked them up, they both signed the covenant on the same day. So they're a pretty tough crowd, like.
So with that, does that make you hate the perpetrators, the people who caused this? Mm. You know, the people who were responsible for all of this?
Maybe.
Or was it both sides were responsible?
Maybe at some point. I work now. I'm public relations here. I do reconciliation work, so I am working with both sides of the community to try and bring them together and explode the myths of our past. So To be honest, I'm learning every day, and probably my attitude has changed a lot. I've grown up, I married then, I turned around and I married a guy from another side of the county, and he was in the UDR, and his brother had been murdered when he was out on patrol.
What was his name?
Alan Ferguson.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, he was murdered. And when I met Robin, Alan had been, we got married in 85. So Alan was murdered in 1978. So I struck up a very close affiliation with his mother. His mother, a very strong lady as well. She had three sons. And Alan was the middle child. And the eldest son had went away and served in the Skins. And then my husband was, him and Alan were both on the UDR. And she herself had worked in a munitions factory during the war. So she was very much, and her father had served out in the Dardanelles and in the First World War in the Battle of Somme. So she was very much, so she, the way she coped with Alan's death was that he had died in his uniform, protecting his country, preventing terrorism. And she coped with it that way because she felt if they'd taken him away and murdered him, she could not have coped with that. But that he died actually in his uniform as a soldier. So she coped with it that way. But we're still coping with Alan's death. I'm still coping with my husband, who his mother died last year. And it really brought everything back. That they, Alan and Ron and Robin decided, and even my children would say that they felt somebody came into the room and took Granny when she was dying, and they said that was Alan. They felt that he, Robin and Ron, felt that his presence was in the room when she was dying.
Really,
and that was it. It brought a lot back, and. I am open-minded, so is Robin, very open-minded, and is ready to challenge the people who murdered his brother. Rather than saying he won't talk to terrorism, he wants to challenge them, and I would be of the same outlook. I believe in the truth. Now, there's lots of things that's happened in our past. I was up on Saturday there with a young group of 20-plus kids, and we did Croke Park. And we did the GPO. Now, the GPO, or the Crook Park, I didn't find that terribly interesting, but the GPO was very interesting in the East Horizon. And I was telling all these bits to Robin when I come home about the different things. So my attitude is probably, I'm pretty open-minded, but I believe in the truth. And what happened on the border to me was ethnic cleansing. They murdered without mercy. And I can't see how that would be right. Diplomatic means, or diplomacy, is the way you go forward. You don't go out and murder people. I don't believe in UVF terrorism. I don't believe in IRA terrorism. And that's what it was. Both of them was terrorism. Like, I have people in my group now, in my South Fermanagh Culture Project. I have two people from Belturbet, whose nephew or brother-in-law was murdered by UVF at the time in the Monaghan Bourbons. There was a bomb in Belturbet as well. And then I have people who've had family members murdered by the IRA. Now, I have also an independent guy on it whose father was an independent MP for this area. I have also got Alliance. I believe it's an open mind. I believe it's open discussion. But I do believe what happened was blatantly wrong, and terrorism is wrong.
Yeah,
you know, and murdering people, and what people went through.
Your maiden name it was
Annon, Annon, A-N-N-O-N.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
and so, but you were close enough to the border, and so if you talk about ethnic cleansing, your mother was a threat. You know, your house was, your farm was a threat.
But
you got on with it.
You did. You had no choice. You had no choice because...
And just hoping it wouldn't come to you, is
yes, it? Yes. And because I think You always knew that anybody in uniform was more in threat than you.
Yeah.
But it probably, when I look back at it now, they probably would have taken everybody else in uniform that they possibly could, and then they would have moved in on us as well. Like, because they were, it was, I know there in Garrison, there was loads of families had to move from the border because they got letters to move.
But there were people out near you that I spoke to who had farms. Mm-hmm. Eric Nicholson.
Yes.
John Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
And so these, they were threatened. They had to, you know, stick with it as well. But yeah. they got physical threats.
Yeah. Yeah, they probably did. And I don't know what my mother got, but she probably would have never said. She wouldn't have spoke about it. You know, but she...
Because you were all too young, of
Yes,
course.
We were.
Yeah.
It was... When I think back, it was... It wasn't a good time, and you would not want the next generation to go through that. You know, you just couldn't.
What about... Just tell me about Alan's brother again.
Robin's brother.
Sorry, yeah. Robin's brother, Alan.
Yes.
Yes. So the circumstances behind Alan's...
Murder.
What happened?
He was out on patrol in Garrison. It was World Cup Day. I don't know who was playing who, but we're out on patrol. And whoever was visiting, whatever officer had said, you know, pack up, boys, and go in and see the end of the match. And they parked up in a lay-by between Billake and Garrison, and it was a place seemingly where police would have met quite often to exchange. Balcoo and Billake police would have exchanged their newsletters, newspapers and whatever. So they had pulled in. Little did they know that there was a firing point on the top of the hill, and was mortars fired first, and then they started automatically firing on them. So he was was two of them in fact he just changed seats with another guy in the Land Rover, and basically then they started firing. So one of the rounds went in through, touched the arm or grazed the arm or went through the arm of one of the boys and went into Alan's chest. And he was more or less killed instantly. Now, there's loads of stories has been said that he said things before he died, but we don't really, we try to stay away from that because it was too hard on his mother. But one of the stories was that he called for his mother before he died.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Which is something seemingly folk can do. Yeah. So he called for her. So,
and he was quite a young...
Yeah, my husband was down in that area because he was going out with a girl from down there. And he... the house that he was in, somebody came in and they said, a son of Lofty Ferguson's has been killed. There's down the road. And whoever was in the house said, looked at him, and Robin was sitting there and... said, oh, that couldn't be right or whatever. So Robin tried to get down to where it had happened, I think, couldn't get down, and came home to his house. And by that stage, that was about 10 mile up from where it had happened, and the helicopters were going over, and the mother said to Robin, oh, that'll be them lifting Alan, I'll get the spuds on for the dinner. And he said to her, I don't know, Ma, I think something has happened. Mm-hmm. And some shooting or whatever. So they started to try and ring to find out. So they rang a few of the local men who would have been high up in the UDR, and they wouldn't give them any information. And they rang the hospital wouldn't give them any information. But finally they got somebody on the phone who more or less confirmed that things weren't good. So then somebody came to the house and told them that Alan had been killed. So Alan and Ron was asked, invited then to go in a helicopter and ID him in Omagh, because they flew them to Omagh then. And they brought him home then that evening. And he was buried 2 or 3 days later, and he was 21.
21, my goodness.
21.
It certainly, and well, it's
my husband can't talk anymore. He's told the story a couple of times here to Kenny and whatever, and he's been up in Glencree at the Peace Centre, and he gets on very well with Pat Hayes. Yeah. Pat's a TD up there, and Pat always wants to talk to him, because Robin more or less said he just the terrorists escaped through land that had been left by Protestants who could no longer farm it, and they made their escape, and they were in the south, and he went through all the episode with the HET report, and people coming out to your house and them not really wanting to be there, and being very clinical and leaving and not much better off. So no, it doesn't have good repercussions in a house. It really doesn't. So
that's the aftermath. That's the terrible thing, that you can't get answers.
No, you can't get answers, and yet you have to look at the TV. And my children are very liberal. Some of them. Louise is a doctor, and she was educated in Dublin. And like, we've met Edna Kenny. Robin wanted him sort of to give him some answers, and Edna Kenny promised he would come back to him, and he left. Actually, his mother had got an HET report, and he left it with Edna Kenny, and we never heard after that from Edna Kenny.
So nobody has ever been held responsible either for this, or nobody admitted to the killing even.
No,
imagine.
So it's been a rocky old road, but you know, all I would say that most people want to get on with their lives, but they do not want their faces rubbed in it. Yeah. And glorifying in terrorism, glorifying the IRA, and being proud of being in the IRA. I'm sorry, they weren't an army; they were terrorists.
So, did you ever get involved yourself in security forces?
Yeah, I did. I actually wanted to join when I lived up on the border, and my mother found the forms, and she refused to allow me to join. So I married my husband when I was 21, and I joined the Royal Irish Regiment, and I served it till its disbandment in 2007. So I reared 5 children in the middle of all that, but I still served, and I had a ball. I did patrols. I turned around then, and I ended up being a welfare officer, plus a recruiting officer,
and so when you were doing all that, of course, now the Good Friday Agreement had come in 1994, so you missed most of the troubles.
I would readily admit that. I also said that I didn't serve in the thick of it at all. I only served nearly when...
Was it important to you to pick up a uniform and go out?
I was very proud.
Proud of what?
Proud of being in my uniform and serving my country. Yeah, I really was. And I used to talk to an old major, and he was very, very wise old major. Very, very sensible man. And he only died there a few months ago. And he used to always say to me, it's not what... it's what you've prevented from happening. Never think that your time on the road or stopping or doing your patrols or whatever is wasted. You may have prevented another death, and that is the most important thing. So,
and just tell me now, define when you say your country.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what it is.
Northern Ireland.
And is that Irish, or is it...
I am Irish, but I'm British Irish. Till it's decided differently. But that's my view.
Jenny Ferguson, thank you. Thank you for telling me your story. I appreciate it very much.
No problem.